Welcome to another episode of The Thirsty Mage. I am David Lloyd, and my convictions have led me to host this podcast each week, including tonight's episode where we're going to find out just how successful we were at picking video game guests for each other. I mean, what do you get the people who play everything? Well, we all gave it a good shot and managed to get past that first hurdle by picking games that the others haven't actually played yet. So now that we've had a little bit of time with it, we're going to find out how much we enjoyed them. Joining me tonight, after getting into the mind of a 90-year-old woman, it's Jordan Rudick.
Now, I was reading the notes and trying to figure out what you're referring to. If you're talking about my game, yes. She's 14.
I know, but the real queen's like 90-something. I figured going into the game, you would like, you know, get do a little research on Queen Elizabeth, make sure you're doing picking the right choices. Yeah.
Yeah. No, my interest in the royal family is very, very minimal. although my mother's obsessed with Prince Harry and was it not Monica? Rachel? What is her name?
Meghan.
Yeah, of course. They almost moved to BC, and I think it was like the talk of the province for like a week or something like that. So, but yeah, no 90-year-old women that I know of or thinking of right now. But yes, we will talk about a certain young princess shortly.
Yeah, the Harry had to move on after you greedy British Columbians wouldn't pay for his security.
That's right. Nothing to do with wanting to move to the States where their taxes are less or anything like that, I'm sure.
Yeah. And here to let us know if he managed to survive the mind of Akitoshi Kawazu, it's Casey Gibson.
It was something, all right. But yes, I'm here. That's all that matters, right?
Yeah, you survived your game. It didn't wreck your mind.
It didn't kill me.
You didn't break the Switch by throwing it off the wall or anything like that.
Well, the good thing is I was playing it on my PC, so.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, Switch was safely tucked away in the other room.
Yeah, so you might have had to buy a new keyboard, though. Yeah. That's what you're saying. Damn you, Kawazu!
Or hey, if you're getting mad at Kawazu and not me, that's a victory in my book.
Yeah, that's right. And finally, here to tell us whether playing as a cat girl with missing memories is as relaxing as a distraction as it sounds, it's Paige Chamberlain.
I definitely don't see how it's meant to be relaxing, to be honest.
You didn't find that the little dance battles relaxing?
Well, I'll talk about that, but I don't know. I find myself pretty defenseless, so I don't know how it's...
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, there's definitely, you're mostly just like trying to avoid stuff for the most part. So
I think the way we recorded the episodes, like when we revealed what everyone had got for one another, this is the first I'm learning about what Paige got from the notes. So we're going to talk about it later. But I reviewed that, of course. And yeah. David, I know you had played it obviously before too, but yeah, it's just the first time seeing of Paige's game. So it's like, oh, okay, that's funny.
What's funny too, we'll get to it when Paige starts talking about it, but you and I had like different experiences with the game, which I thought was
very much
funny
so.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like from Paige's introduction that she's more in line with me. So I'm kind of happy to hear that, but
I don't know. I guess I just predetermined or predisposed to enjoy Nisa games, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm biased, but
you're still trying to get every code from them, so you had to like all of the games.
Right? That's right. I'm contractually obligated to push their product.
David will shill for codes.
Yeah, that's right.
Bought and paid for, right here, right over here. Yeah.
I need to get those early codes for Legend of the Heroes games. My whole purpose of life.
for the big dogs one day.
That's right.
Yeah, I tell you, when the person they switched up people at NISA, like they got a new PR person, and I nearly had a heart attack.
Yeah, that's right. So,
gotta start kissing someone else's butt now.
Exactly. You got to start from scratch again with all the trying to ingratiate yourself.
Yeah, pick up all the cards, David. You can do it.
I'm trying.
Re-review Giraffe and Annika. Re-review both of these games.
I got to get the new address to send, a bouquet of flowers or something.
That's like it.
Some chocolates. Yeah. Yeah.
Donuts every day. Yeah.
Tim Hortons. There you go.
That's right. A dozen donuts from Tim Hortons will buy anything, let me tell you.
You might especially never get a code again if you send him the wrong donut, so that's the problem. Yeah, send the Long Johns. He's not into chocolate. Oh, no.
Yeah. Or if you accidentally send those, the Justin Bieber brand Tim Hortons. I don't know if you found any of those lately.
I didn't try those Timbits. They looked very decadent. I don't know if you had a chance to, but
no, I don't know if they have them in up here in Quebec. So
okay.
I'm not sure we even know who Justin Bieber is in this part of the country.
All the Justin Bieber merchandise attached to this promotion. So for those who don't know, there were Tim Hortons, donut coffee shop brand. They have these little donut holes called Timbits. And so Justin Bieber did a cross promotion with them where he kind of invented or got three flavors of Timbits. And they were all quite fancy compared to the normal flavors,
but there was also, too, I think,
this merch. Yeah, I think there might have been like a bag, a shirt, and a hat, or something like that. And they sold out like instantly, and were all over like eBay and stuff for 100-200% markup kind of thing, maybe more than that, probably hundreds of dollars. So, missed out on the opportunity to scalp Justin Bieber Tim Hortons merch. So that's big regret for me in the last few weeks.
I'm holding out for the Celine Dion merch.
Yeah, well, they better do it fast. She's not getting any younger, so.
Yeah. But speaking of things that make no sense, why don't we start off with some Square Enix trailer talk? We had a few trailers drop this week, Bray. So before we get into our games, maybe we'll just have a quick chat about those, because they're pretty, they go from pretty hilarious from like the Stranger Paradise stuff to pretty neat triangle strategy ones. We're starting to get, I'm glad they put those triangle strategy ones out, because I completely forgot what was going on in that game. So it's been a good refresher.
They certainly throw
me
a whole lot of information at you.
Oh, there's like names coming from like every direction. Yeah. Like, I don't know who any of these people are.
As someone who is like absolutely horrible with names, I could watch like full seasons of TV shows and like I know who the character is and everything, but like I couldn't tell you their name. And then this trailer, literally every 5 seconds it was like so and so of so and so and so, and then I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, anything more complicated than Bob and Dale and you're out, Casey. You're just
you can tell me your name, like I'll meet someone and they'll tell, and it just, I don't even register it. It's not even like that I like forget it. It just like doesn't compute. It's so stupid. I hate
as soon as they have a title like of and then a place, Casey's out. As soon as it's George of Cumberland, I'm out. It doesn't matter what your name is, George. It's you've got a title attached to a region or a castle or something like that. I think the cool thing about all the characters and all the names and stuff is like that really reminds me of Final Fantasy Tactics. Because there were so many characters in that game, really, really dense story. Obviously, Triangle Strategy, they're playing up the how important your choices are, and I really noticed that about the first trailer. They kind of said, they were kind of talking about how you can do something illegal to get out of a bind, or you can try to do the morally right choice. And we know that that's going to be a big part of it, but I'm just happy to see them kind of continuing to hammer down that since the demo and since their extended development time over the last year, they haven't gone away from that important theme of the game, of the choices that you make. So I don't want to watch too many of these trailers just because I'm already getting the game. I'm super excited about it. And I don't need to see any more to be convinced, but it was good to check out this one, the first character trailer about Roland, just to be reminded of some of the cool things that are happening there.
Yeah, it seemed like they doubled down on the sort of, I think it was like, see dark things and like expose them or partake in them kind of thing. So working up the choices, meaning something.
Well, before the show, you had asked me where the chaos talk went in the Stranger Paradise, Stranger Paradise trailer. And Square has replaced it with the Conviction talk and Triangle Strategy trailers. Cause I think that Roland one either Roland or Frederica, they must have said the word conviction like 12 times.
You better be careful, or Jack from Stranger Paradise, he's going to start saying conviction now, and that'll be the new buzzword for 2022. Yeah. Paige, have you been watching the Triangle Strategy character trailers, or are you kind of like me, just kind of trying to stay in the dark right now?
Character trailers aren't usually something I'm interested in unless really want to see more of the game, but from the demo that I've played, I know I really want the game, so I don't, like, I'll see whatever happens there in the game and enjoy it.
I'm with you there. You're not going to do a deep dive on all the trailers on YouTube?
No.
I'm just disappointed that the Triangle Strategy trailer didn't end with an Evanescence song.
Well, they spent all their budget getting Frank for Frank Sinatra for Stranger of Paradise. So,
yeah. Well, that's the other trailer that we saw this week. I don't know when it actually came out because it kind of just snuck up on me. But yeah, I watched. It was a long
Frank
one too.
Does that, you know?
Six or yeah, he does. It's like I don't. It might have even been like an 8 or 9 minute trailer by the time it was done because it felt.
I think
like,
it felt like it that, David. They ended with Frank Sinatra, really like a blast from the past. Like, oh man, this is just going.
They didn't. I feel like they went into Frank Sinatra, but then went back to the trailer for like another 2 minutes after that or something. It was really
maybe. I don't know. Yeah, it only came out a couple days ago. It does feel like it just kind of popped up out of nowhere. And yeah, you're right. Square has been dropping a bunch of trailers for their. Those are both March games, if I'm not mistaken, yeah. Right? So the full blown marketing cycle for springtime there. I just want to point out one thing about the Stranger of Paradise that really jumped out at me. I think the bosses look pretty cool. Like the way that the four fiends, the elemental fiends, are being reimagined as kind of as more like humanoid or like closer to like bipedal human type enemies as opposed to kind of like just beasts. Animalistic creatures. Like I think it's cool. I think the way they look, the way they talk is neat, and I know those fights are going to be pretty sweet. So.
Well, I just think how there's just so much that's bait that they're going into the original Final Fantasy with that it's just every time I see it, it just piques my interest more and more because it's like, oh, there's, you know, this thing from there. And I'm assuming the guy with the eye thing going on there was like the dark elf, whose name escapes me now.
Astos.
So you got him there, and then you got the fiends all look pretty neat. Mm-hmm. It's funny though because like the first few trailers we had Jack who seemed very purposeful of like, oh, I gotta kill chaos. But now in this trailer it was like, I don't really want to be here. This is kind of the vibe I was getting from him, like this. Let's just do what we need to do and get out of here. Let's not, you know, I don't want to remember things or get too close to people. Is it funny, like the intensity change is very black and white from one trailer to the next. It's kind of funny.
Again, I think my understanding was that after that first trailer where he said chaos 50 times, Square Enix was really surprised by the reaction to the trailer that's what people focused on. And so I think they're probably doing a hard pivot and like never going to say chaos again. They're barely going to show him. And they're just going to show like all these different aspects of the game that aren't just, you know, Jack with that singular focus on the one thing. They got to show that there's some depth to this game, different areas, different enemies that you're fighting, different characters you're seeing. It's not just Jack versus chaos. And the whole game is about finding chaos, right? Like, I think it's so ironic to me that you're basing this game on Final Fantasy 1 where chaos, you don't really know anything about chaos or see the creature until the very end of the game. Yeah. And yet this game seems to be obsessed with chaos. It's like you go from this total mystery enigma to like post, it's just plastered everywhere is this idea of chaos. And like from the very beginning, you're seeking out chaos. It's just such a weird title. Like I'm becoming fascinated by it, but I think I would hate it. I don't even know what kind of game it is. Like, dude, I played the demo. I still don't know what kind of game this is. Like, is it open world? Like, how do you get to the areas?
It's probably like Nier since it was made by that team.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Nier is more mission, as far as I'm aware. It's like you pick and then you go into the level.
Yeah, it's probably going to be like that page.
Cry.
Yeah.
That's the way it seemed from the demo. It seemed like it's like, okay, here's, you know, level one, and you go from beginning to end and fight a boss. And I'm sure it'll just keep being that, but then each level will probably be based on or follow the path that you would follow in the original game. Cause they keep showing all these places. Like they showed like Batoya's cave, and then they showed, Astos, the dark elf there. And I'm sure there's going to be a marsh cave that's going to be impossible that people are going to be ripping their hair out about. And then there has to be all like the dungeons from the fiends, like the volcano and going underwater. It, I'm looking forward to seeing like the half mermaid people. Mm-hmm. Like that'll be pretty neat. Like there's so many neat things that are going to be in this game other than like this could be a complete mind trip. It'll be like watching, you know, Doctor Strange or something, the multiverse movie. It'll just be this wild like things coming out of nowhere that makes no sense and you just roll with it.
Yeah, it's definitely be so weird.
Yeah, it could either go, right? I feel like it's going to be like a game that comes out and people are like, this is amazing, or it's just going to be such a forgettable game that like, and not even maybe necessarily bad, but just like, oh, like, okay, you know, it seems strange. I don't know. I'm not probably going to get this, but I am definitely interested to see what you guys are all thinking about it. And then even just larger, just what the sort of the pulse on it is with the community, right? Like if this is something, because I'm sure Square is probably hoping like this style, like if it takes off, right, to maybe they could, you know, similar style with, you know, the second, third, whatever, you know, or even just, you know, really cut loose and let it go on its own. But they are definitely pushing it hard. I see a lot of posts on Instagram about this game.
I want to see Final Fantasy IV Origins with Jack playing the role of Cecil.
Perfect. Please don't bastardize my favorite game. I would start a petition to get that canceled. I do not want to see something like that. Give me HD 2D for everything, please. Not Stranger of Paradise style. Paige brought up Neo, you know, from Team Ninja, who is developing Stranger of Paradise. And I think it's funny, like Neo is similar to Dark Souls, like that action RPG style. But it's something about it feels different. And I think that's my problem with Stranger of Paradise. It doesn't feel like Dark Souls. I wish it did. It feels more like Neo. It's fast. It's faster. It's a more combo based. It's very dark. But also kind of, I'm trying to think of how I would describe it. Like trying to be cool, something like that. You know, Dark Souls isn't trying to be cool. It's trying to be brutal and ruin your day. But there's just something about it that just rubs me the wrong way, even though I did see some cool stuff in this trailer for sure.
I guess time will tell, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, it might be a good time to jump into our Christmas gifts. So these are the games we got about a month ago now, I guess, or a little over a month ago. And we've had a chance to play a bit of it anyway. I imagine most of us have played a little bit at least. And we're here to give our impressions and see how well we did picking them. And I'm fairly confident from our pre-conversation before the show that I'm going to fall into last place on who pick the best game, but that's okay. I'm taking my lumps to maintain my Nisa relationship, and if that's, you know, I'm sorry, Paige, that you had to fall on that sword.
She took one for the team.
The
David team.
Yeah, but maybe before we jump into that game, maybe Casey, we'll start with your adventure into Kowazu.
Yeah, so Jordan got me Romancing Saga 3, and I had not played a saga game or a proper saga game, right? Because I guess like Alliance Alive and some of those other games are sort of similar vein. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like I've played some of those.
Yeah.
They have similar sort of, you know, threads or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, so this game here is you start off, you pick one of eight characters. At first, I thought they were all just sort of generic, like, oh, okay, whatever, sort of generic characters here. But they all, I guess, have sort of like a prelogue, right, that sort of is different for each one. And then I believe it meets up to like a point that is more, I guess, just sort of similar between each path. Mm-hmm. I forgot who I picked. I think his name was Thomas. I think it's just the first one. I ended up changing his name because, again, I was just thinking like, oh, this is just a placeholder name. But yeah, it is definitely a really weird game. So the biggest thing, I guess we'll start off with, the game looks great. Like I love the pixel art, and the style is so good. Just exploring, right? You sort of run into the enemies there. They all look good too. But then it and the music is really good too, right? Like I don't know what it is. I feel like every RPG on the Super Nintendo, it just had like the best soundtrack of all time.
No kidding. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why. It just seems like a trend that all those games had really good soundtracks. But
the
weirdest thing with this combat is, and really what sort of I'd say put the damper on it for me is just it everything seems pretty random almost. Not everything, but a lot of things. So there are, you don't get experience points, right? You don't level up per se, but you do get stat increases, and they, I guess they seem random. I don't know if it is exactly like, oh, you get hit more, your HP goes up more. I don't know if it's exactly like that, but it just seemed like sort of throughout battles, it'd just be like, oh, this stat went up, that stat went up, and like, it feels good, like it's exciting to get see the stats go up, but it also is just sort of like, without having to, I mean, I'm sure I could go online and find people who have looked at the code and found out exactly, you know, what triggers things to boost. But it just seems sort of like, oh, okay, I'm unlocking sort of random stat boosts, and then also unlocking like random skills as well, which is, again, it just, it feels like just too random for me, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And they don't do a great job of explaining what's going on. It's just like, oh, okay, I'm in the battles here. Things are going up. All right, cool. I guess there are some cool things I did like is that, right, I'm pretty sure like any character could use any weapon, and then those skills are associated to the weapon more so than it is like a character class or job per se. And Jordan, correct me if I'm wrong here. It has been a while since I played this, so
the truth is, it's been a while since I played it too. And I'm trying to think of what you're saying sounds about right. But I think it almost reveals what is so interesting but tricky about the game is that so much of it is you just don't know. Don't know what's going to happen next or how things work, and it's this puzzle you're figuring out. Even dozens of hours into the game, you're still trying to figure things like that out.
Yeah, so that was all right. So it's good to know I'm not at least an idiot and just like missed what was going on, and that it is sort of what it is. There was some cool things that you also like. Yeah, you purchase spells instead of, again, like there's no leveling up, right? So like you're not being able to learn those organically, right? So you end up purchasing them. What was cool is like your HP just like regenerates after battles.
Mm-hmm. Which is convenient. Yeah.
Which is nice, because then it's almost like each battle is its own contained, like I can go balls to the wall, and like if I, you know what I mean, if oh, I just barely got out of there, and you don't have to worry about like, oh god, I ran into another battle 1 second later and I didn't have time, and now I'm screwed, you know? So it is sort of nice to have that bit of insurance almost.
If you start a dungeon and you know, all your health gets taken away in the first fight, you don't feel like you have to leave and go heal and then mm-hmm. come back, right? You can just go through the whole thing. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, it helps with the pacing, right? Like, yeah, nothing's worse than like you go through half a dungeon like, oh, I'm not going to make it, better go back.
Mm-hmm.
Retreat, reheal, and then have to clear a bunch more stuff to sort of get back to where you were. Of course, right, generally in those types of games, you're getting experience, so it's not, you know, a lost cause per se, like you're still gaining stuff, but and then I guess like again, I don't know, it's just weird. It's like I don't want to say like I hated it or anything, but it just didn't really click with me. Mm-hmm. So it isn't, you know, I put like a hour or so in, a little over an hour. I didn't play a whole ton because, again, it just like I said, almost all the randomness was just a little too much, I think.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because, again, the game looks awesome. I did do it like I looked into it a little bit, because it'd been, like I said, a couple weeks since I actually played it. I guess it opens up right to where there's no like with the overworld map is just sort of like a series of town, like not like a Mario map, right? But where it's just like, oh, pick the spot you want to go. Like you don't have that traditional overworld, mm-hmm. that you're traveling through. And, I'm trying to think. I had some notes written down too.
You can't go to a new place until someone mentions it, right? Like someone has to talk about a place, or you have to do something in one area to open up another one. You can't just like walk around the map and go somewhere, right? You are kind of picking cities or dungeons or areas on the map from the overworld, and then you just go there. You don't actually like travel. You don't actually sail a ship there or anything like that.
Yeah. But yeah, like I said, it's an interesting game for sure. I'm glad I got to play some of it to have more of a reference on that, this, because it is something, you know, I've seen a bunch, especially with the re-releases coming out. Like it is very visually appealing and definitely catches the eye. And you know, it, obviously, I think a lot of us and probably a lot of people listening to the podcast are probably, you know, cut their teeth or, you know, in the SNES era. With these RPGs, you know, so it's sort of cool to go back and sort of play one that I hadn't gotten a chance to, even though, like I said, it wasn't my favorite, but yeah, no,
a lost one too, because that was one, I could be wrong, but I believe that was the one where it never left Japan and they just localized it recently or something to that effect.
I don't think any of the Super Nintendo Saga games came stateside.
Yeah,
I might be wrong about that.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, there was one that came out like in English officially, like 24 years after its first release. So.
I'm pretty sure it's that one
here. Yeah, Super Famicom. It came out November 11th, 1995, and then for Android, iOS, all those things worldwide, November 11th, 2019.
Yep.
It's funny that Square is on this like saga kick where they're bringing all these old Saga games back and bringing them to the Switch. Like they certainly have a little bit of a nostalgia kick in general, because obviously they're redoing the pixel remasters, but it's just funny that there seems to be this very concentrated look at the Saga games, because they're obviously on console and PC. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm sure it helps that Kwazu's still with Square. So it's like they got the guy there. Like that's probably part of why it's getting such a push. But it also seems like there is like a particular executive there. There's like this young guy who seems to like be all in on Saga and must have some kind of clout, because it seems like he's been pushing the force behind this push to get those games out there. So curious to see what kind of money is coming in for those, if it's been worth it. Like it's been neat playing some of the old ones, like the getting the collection, or what was it? I don't remember the exact word, but there was like the Saga games where it had like the Game Boy version with it. I thought was pretty neat.
The Saga collection of Saga. Yeah. It was a good one.
So yeah, they're pretty neat. And I kind of have the same opinion on the game as Casey with the. It can be tough to play those games with the randomness. Like you said, there's probably code behind where it's like you get hit 10 times and you know, X stack goes up or whatever. I'm sure there's, I can't imagine, maybe people there's a little bit of randomness it to it, or a random generator to it or something. But I even remember joking with, I think that was one of the games where it's like you attack yourself when you're against weak enemies so that your HP goes up quicker. And like, little things like that. So I guess it's one of those things where it's if you're someone who likes to play around with mechanics or like kind of abuse systems and stuff, it might be more appealing to them. But it's certainly not a straightforward, I wouldn't call it like a traditional RPG at all.
So apparently there was a Saga presentation or talk in 2021 where they mentioned an announcement coming this year, 2022, for a new Saga game. So it kind of stands to reason that if you are releasing a new game in a series that's been around for a long time, you would want to go back and release a bunch of the back catalog games. And the Switch is the place to do that, right? Because a lot of the people that grew up playing these games, in English or somewhere else, you know, or in some other language, you probably own a Switch. You probably have a fondness for like, you know, nostalgia and retro games, and so it makes sense to release all these old Saga games on Switch. They must be selling well enough, or at least breaking even. And like you said, David, there are people that are making decisions that obviously have a fondness or an attachment to these games. But I think the fact that a new one's coming makes sense. Of these old ones come back and get a little bit of a touch up.
Yeah, well, and they had
like
those
SMT3, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is there was a couple of Saga games that weren't that old, really. Like Scarlet Grace wasn't really that old.
No,
when they ported it to Switch, so it was. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a tidal wave of Saga games. So I guess it works out if people are, you know, pick up Scarlet Grace and really enjoy it, which Scarlet Grace is a really good saga. That's probably my favorite of the sagas.
I mean, rather than release just one, like if you find out, like you play the way it probably works is you play one of these, you're going to play a bunch of them, right? And I think I'm kind of in that camp. Like I got two first, and then three, then the collection. I bought Scarlet Grace. I haven't played it yet. Saga Frontier I want to play. Seems kind of cool with all the different characters and their different storylines. I'm definitely interested in the series, but you have to be in the right frame of mind. You have to be kind of understanding and patient with these games. You can't rush through them. I think there's just a right time to play them and a right mood to play them in. And so, I love the series, but it can rub you the wrong way for sure.
Well, it's like the Legends of Heroes where you can't just buy one game. You have to buy like all nine, you know, so it's kind of the same.
You have to. You're obligated to.
Obligated, yeah. And I'll have my address available for Nisa at the end of the show to send those checks, by the way.
Yes, exactly. Good.
You mean they don't direct deposit them for you?
No.
They should have filled out the form for a direct deposit by now, I agree.
They're probably just going to pay with merch. Little Lloyd Banning, what do you call them? Plushies.
They're not taking Bitcoin yet or NFTs?
Well, the NFTs are on their way. They do everything like 10 years behind. There's going to be an NFT.
It's true.
10 years from now, and it'll still be in Japanese.
They're just figuring out the blockchain, and then maybe a few years from now, it'll be NFTs. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. But Paige, how about... your game, now that we're talking about NISA America, we can jump into Giraffe and Annika.
Mm. So I remember, I think when the game like first came out, I saw it and I was like, what is that? And I saw how the graphics looked and then I was like, never mind. It's just that thing where they've got the 3D anime character models and then the world itself is kind of like... realistic in a way that doesn't quite vibe with the rest of
they
it.
Don't
like
match.
Doesn't quite, yeah. Yeah, they don't quite match.
Yeah.
It's like an original PlayStation game where it's like where you have like the character running around like almost like a pre-made like a static background or something like that. You kind of get the same vibe-ish.
And I didn't really know much about what the game was aside from that. And then when we first got it, I got screenshots, and then you informed me that it has rhythm game elements, and that's probably what most interested me in it, is that part. Mm-hmm. But actually playing it, the movement of the character is odd, and managed to give me motion sickness. Which I normally only get motion sickness from first person games or, you know, if the frame rate's terrible, but I'm just guessing it's just the way this character walks around or something.
Well, I think the movement of the legs doesn't match how quickly she's actually going in the world.
I'm watching video now.
Casey, don't get sick. Get in case you're gonna throw up.
I also found it really interesting because your characters, I guess, forgets who she is,
she
doesn't bother to tell anybody that's talking to her that she doesn't remember anything. She just goes, like, who are you, she's weirdo?" And the friends, just pause. Like, that's an interesting. I was like, you know, all the times there's an amnesiac in a story, I don't know if I've ever seen them just like. Get brushed off or whatever, like as if they don't try to press the matter too much. I was saying how because what you explore the world, you go into like these dungeons, and I feel very defenseless because you can't attack. So the first one, you're just hiding, waiting for ghosts to move out the way, and then running past them.
It's amazing. I'm watching a video and it's like synced up to exactly what you're talking about.
I think I got a bit confused just in work because there's all these different places it looks like you can go, but then you can't actually go. Like I originally, did finish the second dungeon, which then fixed one of my main complaints about the game, which was the swimming, because I felt like I was drowning a lot because, I mean, this still doesn't control great. I'm like, you go in water and you're just drowning automatically, and you surface, but your head doesn't actually go above water unless you're on land. So you can't just, like a normal game where you could, like, you know, Mario would have could swim up to the top and get air, you just die the whole time until you, like, stand. As I didn't like that. And then it was funny, actually, because I did the one thing after I unlocked the I can swim for a bit longer, like without dying. Yeah. I went back, you know, to explore some places I had unlocked from the starting area, because that's the fun, like that's what I like to do in games, is the exploration and stuff. So I went under this water bit that I drowned in before, and then immediately I still can't go there because now I need something else. So it's just like, ah. And then it was funny, I unlocked a blue key because it's like doors of certain colors, and then obviously you get the key and then you can go them. So I went to go this other one. It's like, no, I should head over to the main story point now. And I'm like, but it's right. Just let me, why did you make it a blue door if you won't let me open it? And then, yeah, so the rhythm, so you get them dungeons, you get to a boss fight, which is the rhythm battle, and they're okay. I'm thinking maybe I should have switched them to hard, but they're fun. I think the main highlight of the game I can say is that the music's good, which you'd hope it was when you have, like, rhythm fights. I liked that. I did find I was also pretty disoriented in the dungeons. I didn't do too much extra exploration. I mean, partly because just before I got to the second dungeon was when I was starting to feel motion sick, so I was just like, ugh, like trying to push through it. And then before I got to that second area, I had a problem where I'm wandering around and I'm finding stuff, but I couldn't figure out what to do. And then I come back and it's nighttime, and then the NPC I need to talk to is there. So, like, I literally was just stuck because I wasn't at the right time of day for something to show up. There's a lot of signs over that tell you everything, but it's still, it's just like, really? I couldn't have just moved it here beforehand. And then, like, just little things like, oh, I need to find this many kids, but one of them said they're going on a boat, and I'm like, well, I can't, there's no boats I can use, what do I do? But it's like, I just got to find every other one, and then it's okay. The dungeons are just, they're pretty, like, big, and yeah, you don't have too much, because the dungeons are more really open-looking areas, like, the second one is just, like, islands and water and boats and ghosts with squirt guns shooting at you on sight. It's very, like, yeah, pretty. I did eventually, like, in that one, I figured out, like, which boat goes where, but, like, initially when you first come across it, like, there's so many extra bits you can go to, it's very easy, unlike a normal dungeon where it's a cave where you could go, I'm going to keep going left or whatever, I'm going to remember the directions. It's like, I really got no idea where I just was. And I didn't find myself exploring too much because I think the only rewards you really get are meowster pieces, which are art pieces of cats, and I'm not a cat fan, so I don't like, it's just none of interest to me. So I'm at the point where it's partially, most of the motion sickness is why I won't continue to play it, because I'm not going to force myself to play something that makes me feel unwell if I don't have to. And I'm at the point where it's like, not sure if I'd want to play more. I feel like maybe I could do like one more because I'd probably get a new ability, but just the way the main gameplay works, I'm not really into. And that's one thing where when it comes to a game, you got to decide, should I keep playing this game just because I started it, or should I stop playing it because I
because I hate it.
That was one of my gaming resolutions that I sent into Talk Nintendo podcast. Casey, Alex, and Perry talked about that a week ago. David, I think you're getting coal in your stocking this year after what you put Paige, after what you put Paige through. This is tragic.
I'm gonna have to lay all the blame at the feet of the developer, Atelier Minima. I think that's who we should all be blaming right now. It's no one else's fault.
Definitely not the publisher's fault. Yeah,
definitely not the publisher's fault. No, it's funny. Like you said, you and I, we both got the when it came out. I can't remember if it was 2019 or something like that, but where it came out, and you and I both got the reviews.
Yeah.
And I actually looked yours up. You had a 5.5. I think I had 7.5 or 8 or something like that.
And I thought I was harsh until I heard Paige talk about the game. Jeez.
Well, it didn't make you sick, so I guess you had that one step up.
It's true. I was okay.
Yeah. But Yeah, I don't know. Like, it was funny because to be completely honest with you, I only took it because it was Anissa and I wanted to make sure they gave me Legends of Heroes later on. So I'm like, whatever, I'll review this stupid game. And I maybe it was like expectations versus reality in the sense where it's like, I looked at it and thought it was going to be awful. And then because and it wasn't that bad. So it actually like seemed good. So maybe it's just like this measurement of, you know,
I've definitely done that before with games. Yeah. Like everyone universally, like this is the worst game ever. And you go and you're like, ah, I was expecting like Balan Wonderworld, dude. Like this isn't bad at all.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it has, like you said, it has that cycle of where it's like, okay, there's like a main world where you have to explore to like find keys or find puzzles or whatever to unlock the dungeon. And then you go into the dungeon and it's kind of like a self-enclosed maze in a sense. Like they're more maze like as you get further into the game. I think like the first level is pretty straightforward. And then at the end of the dungeon, you end up fighting a boss in this rhythm game. And it's always a witch. Like I think the first one you fight her, like you actually fight her herself, the witch. And then every battle after that, it's like some minion that the witch has brought, but the witch is dancing like next to the minion, which is hilarious.
Yeah, it was like she was getting pretty hyped up in the second fight.
Yeah. Was that the octopus? And she was like a cowboy crab. Or something?
Crab.
Yeah. Crab, yeah.
So, oh yeah, no, I think she was in like a swimsuit or something for that one. But there's one later on where she's like a cowboy and I can't remember what the boss is, but it's hilarious to that like she's dancing and you're dancing and then you finally beat the boss and it's kind of funny. And then yeah, like the island is just like, so every time you get through a dungeon, then you get more access to the island and till you end up working your way up the mountain and stuff. So, but yeah, like there's no battles. Like you're just avoiding. And I think the first thing I noticed was that the way the character runs just doesn't make sense based on it. She's going faster than her feet are moving. So it's kind of like this weird, like for me, I just like, whatever, I got used to it after a while, but I can totally see how it could make you motion sick because it doesn't make sense. Like brain wise, you're just looking at it and you're like, this just like, I can look at it and it doesn't make sense.
So he even knew it was going to make her sick.
I didn't think it was going to make motion sick. You know,
I did hear that women are apparently more susceptible to motion sickness in games.
Oh,
yeah.
The only time I've been motion sick in a game was I played a VR game on the Oculus, and it was this weird. So, like, you controlled your movement with your left hand, and you could go like fast or slow, but it didn't. Your body. So when you're moving, like. To me, they should have made some kind of walking mechanic where like the head kind of bobbed or something, but it was just like I would hit forward and then it was like a rocket. You're just like, it was like you're on a minecart or something. You're just going straight ahead with no movement. And I'm just like, holy smokes. Like I couldn't handle it. And then I'd stop and I'd be like, have to close my eyes because I'm like, what just happened? Because it doesn't feel right.
I'm dying.
Yeah. It's like, where are my feet? I don't know where I am. It's like, it's even worse because I played it in a small office, the same office where you and I played Rocket League, Casey. We cracked out an Oculus in that little office and tried not to kill myself in there, but. Yeah, that was the only time. Actually, I ended up going home after that because I'm like, I don't feel right anymore. I'm leaving.
Oh, dude, you should just keep that at work whenever you need to go home early. Just be like, oh, I'll play a little bit of this game.
Yeah, it was like some kind of like Call of Duty for Oculus or something. It was really weird.
With any luck, there'll be a Draftanica for Oculus you can try later this year.
Just don't look down at your feet if you start running.
That's it, yeah.
Cat pictures look better in VR.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sorry about that. I thought it was going to be a little more fun and cute than pukey.
Well, like I said, it's not the kind of game that I'd normally assume would make me motion sick. So I was just like, oh, okay.
At the very least, you learned another game that is not good for your health. That's right.
Thank you.
we got nowhere to go but up from here, Jordan. So why don't you tell us about your game, Long Live the Queen?
Sure. Yeah. So Paige got me a game called Long Live the Queen. It is part visual novel and part like kind of RPG simulation type game, I guess. You do have kind of stats that go up that affect the story and unlock different outfits and things like that too. So the game centers around a 14-year-old girl named Elodie, who is on her path to becoming the queen after her mother passes away. The idea, or I guess the minute-to-minute gameplay involves kind of choosing classes to take and that can boost your stats, but also making decisions about, you know, if a prisoner should be put to death or should be pardoned, or, you know, if you should marry somebody, if you should, you know, participate in a war or hold back. So you're making kind of, even at her young age, you're making kind of big, major political decisions, and those can lead to different outcomes for the castle and for you. So after choosing the classes, you see your stats go up, and they can go up higher or lower depending on your mood. So that's another thing you're affecting. After the classes, you choose, you choose an activity around the castle, and that can, either lower or raise the, your mood in different ways. And the predominant mood, whether that's, you know, cheerful or depressed or lonely or whatever it is, that will affect which stats can go up or can be, I guess, raised higher or maybe not raised as high, depending on the classes that you take. So I guess you're kind of trying to balance, you know, what stats you want to raise with the classes you're taking and the mood that you're in. So it's a little more complex than it seems. And so when I was playing through it, it took me a little while to figure out, like, okay, where do I want my stats to be to boost, to make the classes or make my training more effective. And then if my stats get higher, then I'll be able to, you know, explore different parts of the castle, or I'll be able to make certain outcomes happen more, make outcomes more likely in terms of the story. So I got to only one ending in the game. I haven't played a ton yet, but I feel like it's a game where I'd like to do a run and then put it away for a little while and then try something different the next time I get to it. So I guess the first time I played, I was trying to focus on maxing a few stats. And I don't know that that's the best way forward, because you want to have, and Paige will correct me on this because she's gone through the game successfully, actually, you know, living to become the queen, I guess. I got to an ending where a civil war broke out and I was thrown in prison, and that was the end of my run. And everything kind of resets from that point. So it's almost a little roguelike in that way, that you do have to start from scratch if you get to an end state like that. Of course, you can save your progress at any time. So it might be worth, you know, maybe about halfway through a run or after you've made some progress with your stats or whatever, maybe save, and then you can go back to that point and try things differently. So I did make a couple of save files as well. So I might go back to them instead and just knowing what kind of events can come up, play the game a little bit differently. But yeah, it's interesting. I thought initially, like my first 5 or 10 minutes, I was going to hate it. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is because I just felt like it seemed a little obscure. I didn't know. I felt like I was failing everything, basically. Like, you, during the story bits, when character dialogue pops up or different events take place in cutscenes, I guess, you will respond differently if your stats are high enough for a particular kind of, I guess, kind of like a stat check kind of thing, like in a D&D game. If your stats are high enough, you will succeed in a, you know, something that's checking your dance statistic or your knowledge of economics or something. And so I was failing everything at the beginning, but of course that makes sense because you don't have any stats yet. So I wonder, I'm going to try next time maybe more of a shotgun approach where I raise all of my stats a little bit to see if that helps me pass some of those checks and then maybe unlock different story beats, or maybe just, I don't know, get to a safer path where civil war is not breaking out or something like that. But yeah, I don't know. I want to learn more about this game from Paige, but I'm also on the side of like, I also don't want to know too much, because I feel like part of the fun is unlocking and seeing what happens yourself kind of naturally. So yeah, I'm very interested in this game. I feel like it's best played in short bursts rather than all at once. But yeah, I'm definitely eager to. There's tons of achievements. There's like dozens of achievements, and I'm not used to. It's the Steam ecosystem, so to see so many achievements and so many different things you can, I guess, aim for in the game or to try to do, I'm surprised. It felt like a very small game, but it seems like there's a ton of variety to it in terms of the outcomes you can get.
Yeah, so it's called Long Live the Queen because you're trying to make the Queen live till adulthood, and there are many people plotting your downfall, so you can get assassinated among other, like, I'm surprised you had a civil war ending and you didn't just get stabbed, to be honest.
Well, yeah, what happened was, so I think there might have been a fail state really early that I avoided. Some woman shows up, I guess a regent or a neighbor, an aunt or something like that, and the king's like, or the it's your father, right? Your father's the one who kind of guides you through the beginning of the game, is that right, Paige? He's like, oh, I don't think this woman's very good. She's your mother's sister, and she like practices magic. And I'm like, eh, no, bring her on. Let her stay here. And she ended up saving me from a snake. And so my cousin got bit by the snake, and then the snake's head gets cut off by this woman who showed up that I let her stay in the kingdom. So I wonder if I avoided a death there or an unfortunate ending. But yeah,
there's lots of different events. So yeah, like part of the reason I get the game is because it's based on Princess Maker series, and like that was before Princess Maker had made it to Steam. So it's got the same basic principles where you're taking them to this class, which is gonna increase one stat, but it's gonna like decrease another one. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to balance towards. In Princess Maker, there's a lot of endings, just what she becomes at the end of the game.
Okay.
Like the princess is kind of the top thing, but like she's not actually like a royalty like it is in Long Live the Queen. So you sort of balance towards different what ending you want, whereas Long Live the Queen is more you're just trying to figure out what is the best thing to help you have a successful run where you don't get killed or thrown in jail at the end. But yeah, it is very similar with the management. And that's why I like it, is because it's like that series and it's got that different approach where it's a bit more like, oh, like, so it's a bit shorter of a run because you're not raising her for like 8 years. It's like half the time and you could die in the meantime. So
one thing I thought was cool was that as you raise certain stats to a certain threshold, you unlock outfits, and then the outfits, you change your character outfit, I guess, on the kind of the main screen where you're checking out your mood, the skills and which ones you're getting buffed at the moment. And depending on your outfit, you can make your schooling more effective. Like, let's say you put on like a ballerina type outfit, you wear a tutu, and that makes athletics easier to raise. Like, you could raise your dance stat higher or something like that. So I thought that was pretty cool, like the ability to make certain stat buffs stronger by using outfits that you unlock. So I guess the idea of like maybe raising certain stats that you know will give you a particular outfit. I don't know if that's possible. And then you could have all the outfits and you could make your schooling really effective. That'd be neat to me.
Well, yeah, it's all sort of just figuring out things like that. And yeah, I think it only took me a couple hours to get a good ending where I hadn't died. So I was like, yep, successful. But obviously there's a lot more, like, you know, especially with visual novels, often you want to get all the different bad endings, see all the different scenarios. So that's like what a lot of the achievements would be. We're just coming across all the different things that can happen in the game. Because not especially depending on how you react, it might say you want a completely different path of events. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd like to keep playing the game until I get the good ending, but I am very curious about, you know, all the different kind of bad endings or fail states or things that maybe other mechanics that I haven't even discovered that could pop up. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm pleasantly surprised by it. I do want to play more. And yeah, we'll see how it goes. But yeah, pretty neat game. And I appreciate Paige for turning me on to something that I probably wouldn't have picked up myself just because it doesn't look like the type of game I would enjoy. But playing a little bit, I am into it.
Yeah, that's one of the good things about this whole thing is that some of these games we wouldn't necessarily pick up each, for ourselves. So it diversifies our taste a bit and, you know, gets us out there playing some new things. And I guess I'll bring us home with our final one, which I got
from Keith. Sorry, I did have to add one more thing. Didn't get motion sickness from Long Live the Queen. So
that's an automatic 7+ then, right?
For sure. Yeah.
I did not. I also did not get motion sickness from my game.
There you go.
And yeah, so I think when we do this again next, you know, next December, I'm going to have to consult with Casey on I'm going to have to consult with Casey on games for whoever I have to buy for next time, because clearly Casey did a better job of picking his game than I did mine. Because,
well, I was just going to say, everyone's going to pray that they don't get David as their selectee.
That's right.
Oh no!
He's gonna be a rich man, because when Perry does the draw again, everyone's gonna be bribing him to be like this auction. Perry be like, I don't know, Paige offered me 20 Australian dollars, you know, to not get David. So now Jordan, you have to up it to, you know, 20 American, and then it's just gonna keep going up and up.
If Jordan does 20 Canadian, right? What's the transfer rate?
I think Australians. Right up there, right? I think Canadians like just a little bit more. Like I think if Australia is like $1, then the Canadian dollar would be like worth $1.05 or something. It's not much more. It's pretty close.
So I'm the leader in the clubhouse.
Yeah. If you're all offering Perry $20, he's going to take the American, because it's going to be worth the most.
Just make sure you've got some Gravol or some Pepto-Bismol or something beside you, and you'll be fine. You know, give it a good shot.
Make sure you got off the next day of work, you know, just in case you gotta sleep it out.
I'm going to be offering an Oculus game for My Secret Santa next year.
There you go.
But the one I played this year is Darkest Dungeon. So this is, RPG. It, I think it came to Steam first, and then it came to Switch, and then I got the Steam version from Casey. And yeah, this is one of those games where it's like mechanics on top of mechanics on top of mechanics. Like it's insane how much is going on in this game.
So deep.
Oh man, it's crazy. And it's funny. So the game starts off where you're going to this castle. I believe it's like an heirloom. It's like it's like a family thing where you're going there, and there's all these dungeons under the castle, and like a portal where these monsters are coming out. And you basically are supposed to go into the dungeon and kind of come out with the loot, come out alive with the loot anyway. Like you're going through looking for heirlooms to sell and looking for things to make money. And I think the kind of end goal, it's a pretty long game, so I haven't finished it. I think the end goal is to close the portal or find the source of the portal or something like that. That's the way it seems to be. But the way it works is that you arrive at the castle, and there's kind of like a village around the castle that you're staying at. And so there's like a place where you would hire mercenaries to go with you into the dungeons. And then there's when you get back, there's places like there's an armory to get more weapons. And then there's places to relieve stress. So there's like a bar, a brothel, all these different places, and it's funny because
spent most his time.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things too where it's like each character, you have to really go into the character profiles to find out, because like you said, one character will relieve the stress, will go down quicker if they go to the place they prefer. So there's like loners that want to go to the bar, but then there's people that want to go to the brothel, and you have to actually go in and look and be like, okay, this is where this person wants to go and where they want to go. So when you first start the game off, you have like a party of four, and you go into the first dungeon. And the way the dungeons work is like there's this map, this kind of 2D map where it's like, okay, here's where you're starting. There's a pathway to this room, a pathway to this room, and a pathway to this room, and this, and then you have a goal. So like for the first one, it's just get to the end. So you like choose which direction you want to go, and then your party just kind of walks sideways along the map or whatever. And you have to have, there's so many things going on. Like if you have a torch handy, then you won't be surprised by enemies. You won't fall, like you'll be less likely to fall into traps. But if you run out of torches while you're in the dungeon, then yeah, like you could get surprise attack or whatever. And then there's stress. All the characters have a stress level that builds up while you're in the dungeon. And again, if the torch goes out, your stress goes up quicker. And there's a huge inventory management too, because there's way more stuff in the dungeon than you can carry out. So you kind of gotta. So as you're picking up heirlooms, you're like, okay, well, I have to leave this heirloom, or I have to drop an item that I brought with me that I might need. Like I might have to drop my torches to pick up something, or I might have to get rid of the food that I brought, or the bandages or whatever. Like, there's so many different things that you have to consider. And then on top of that, like, there's classes of people. So you'll have like warriors and thieves, and you'll have like there's a guy that turns into a werewolf, which actually freaks out the rest of your party. So using that character can actually hurt you.
Because, a pro and a plus, yeah.
Yeah, because your party stress goes up when they're like, what the hell? Like, they're surprised when he becomes a werewolf, and they're still surprised every time he becomes a werewolf. It's like, you think the shock would get...
They don't trust him in werewolf form.
No, they don't. They're like, as soon as he becomes a werewolf, they're worried about like the werewolf coming after them or whatever. So you have to be careful there. And then there's like mages and beastmasters. Like, there's so many different jobs and stuff. And then, so the party is like a line of four. So some classes prefer to be at the front of the line, and some prefer to be in the back. So you'll have like, when you click on a character, it'll be like, okay, this is their job. This is how they relieve stress. This is where they like to be. These are the different, they have all different attacks.
You have your notepad with all this information to...
Oh man, I need an Excel spreadsheet to keep it all going. And then on top of all that, like, you'll have like tons of these people, because when you get back, then you have to hire more, because these people are so freaked out that you can't send them back into the dungeon right away. You have to leave them in the village to kind of recuperate. And if you don't, you learn the hard way, like my first run. So I think you can hire like three people at a time. So, you know, I hire three people, and there are four of us go in and we come out, and they're like freaked out. And so I leave the three people and I hire three more people. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not, you know, one person has to go. So for a second time, so I'm like, I guess that'll be me. It'll be like the prime character that you create yourself. Well, he died in the second dungeon.
Oh God.
So my main character was toast. So, but you keep going, like you end up just hiring more people. So I had like
main guy.
Yeah. So I had a new party member, but they were also my knight. So I was like down a warrior. So the third dungeon I go in, and I don't really have a warrior type. I have like a rogue, the werewolf, and then like two mages or something. I had a mage and I don't know what he was called, but he like poisoned people. He had like the plague mask, like Plague Knight from Shovel Knight. So his thing was like to poison people. So I didn't really have anybody in that dungeon. I was getting trounced. So you can actually leave the dungeon if you need to, so that you don't lose anyone, but like you have to drop all your stuff. So you like lose all the supplies that you paid money for before you went in, and then
you end up taking a hit for sure.
Yeah. So you get punished pretty bad. So yeah. So it's basically like the whole point of the game is just to go in, get stuff to make money, come back out, use that money to buy resources to go back in further and further and further. And then you have to keep people alive long enough. Like, there's tons of permadeath. Like, you're going to lose people. There's no doubt about it. But the longer you can keep people, the more the stronger they become. And then the harder dungeons you can go into, because there's a bunch of different choices of dungeons you can go to based on the difficulty level. And it's funny because like, if you try to choose one of the harder ones and they're not properly leveled, they'll like, they don't want to go. Like, there'll be a warning message or the party members. I'm going to have to bleep that one out.
Beep.
Yeah. Chuckle about that one out. But yeah, they're like, no, we're not going in there. What are you, crazy? Like, so it's pretty funny that there's just so many mechanics. And then you don't even unlock all the different services in the village right away either. Like, the different places become unlocked as you go, come and go and build money up and stuff. And then you can upgrade those places on top of that. So like, initially I think you can hire three people at a time, but then you can start increasing like how many people you can hire, and then how many people can be in the inventory and your inventories and then your weapons. It's like, oh, it's insane. There's how much is going on in this game.
I mean, if you wanted to, this could be like the game, the Desert Island game easily, right? Like, yeah, there's so much to do here, so many hours, permutations, things to unlock, different characters to try out. Like, it is an awesome game. I love it and hate it. Like, I think it's so cool and I have fun playing it, but it is so painfully difficult.
It's brutal.
Having to manage health and manage sanity and manage inventory and light. It's just so many things to consider when you're in the dungeon. Like every single decision, you know, it is so important, you know, from who you attack to what ability you use to what where you put a character in your line of four. All of those things matter. And it's just, yeah, it's just asking the player to do so much to if you really want to make progress in the game. But yeah, man, it is it's a really, really cool game.
Even corpses can get in the way, because if you're attacking, like if there's four enemies and like certain characters can only attack certain spots, like, you know, you have the enemies, there's like spot 1, 2, 3, and 4 in the line or whatever. So if you kill the first three, their corpses are lying on the ground, so the fourth person is still sitting in the fourth position. But if you don't have anyone that can attack the fourth position, then you have to you have to kill the corpse, like you have to mutilate the corpses to get them out of the turn,
out of the way,
so that it brings that fourth person into the third, and then the second and the first. Yeah. It's just such a weird setup.
Yeah, it's one of those games where I feel like in this style of game, like the rewarding part, I feel like, is getting out ahead of it and feeling like, okay, I've got room to breathe. I feel like this game was always just like, all right, I'm just managing the decline, you know, like
that's right.
Everything is going down and I'm just trying to like make it last as long as possible so that, yeah, you just get a little bit further. But yeah, no, I remember, I picked this up early because it got like a physical release on the Switch, and that was back when I was still picking up all sorts of physical games. And I was like, I remember playing. I was like, my God, there's so much to manage, and everything is going down. It's like everything. There's like a critical failure, and it's like, all right, try and fix it. It's like, oh God,
always running out of something. It's like, oh, like I didn't bring enough torches, or I didn't bring enough shovels, or. Everyone's bleeding and I didn't bring enough bandages. Like, it's just crazy.
I mean, it's the ultimate game. Oh gosh, I totally lost my thought. I'll say something else though. It was one of the first games I probably played, like first times I played Steam or used Steam a lot to play a game. Like I played this game when it first came out, you know, heard about all the buzz, you know, my brother and our friends were playing the game. And so, yeah, I got super into it on Steam. I don't know what, I may have the Switch version. I don't know how much time I've put into it, but yeah, when this game first came out on Steam, or first picked it up on Steam, I was playing it a ton. I think there's a sequel, or there's a sequel in the works.
No, it's in early access, I think.
Okay,
right now,
it's in early access. Okay,
we're working towards. But it's funny because I was thinking, like, what could they add to this?
Yeah, I know. Really, yeah.
Nothing good, because it's or nothing that's like, I don't know if they're going to take some stuff away or just improve on what they got, but like I can't imagine adding more mechanics on top of the million mechanics.
There's
that are
like cart driving or something for the the sequel
Darkest Dungeon 2. There's cart racing.
No, like the actual carriage, like you.
Oh yes, okay.
Move it in directions.
Cool. Okay.
And then like I was watching someone play it, and they were like, "Oh, you're actually supposed to hit the stuff, like, because you get stuff when you hit the leaf piles and things, and yeah, you try and pull it in a certain direction, but like, you know, the other plate, like the
party, and then there's a rock in the way, and then you know."
and I think the classes and stuff have been changed too. So like, one is a bit less broken, so you don't have infinite uses for something anymore, things like that.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty wild sequel, especially if they add like some kind of, I can totally see them having like a cart that you bring with you, where it's like, okay, like this could be where your supplies are, and then if the monsters destroy it, you lose all your supplies or something, like, it'll be pretty interesting, I think.
Just more ways to frustrate the hell out of you. That's all.
Yeah, that's right.
Speak of games that make you sick.
So mad when my character died. I was "What? This is the second dungeon. What are you doing? Like, you're dying on me already." Couldn't believe it. Apparently,
When this game comes to Switch, I will definitely pick that up, because I haven't played. Obviously, David, you say it's an early access. Paige has seen some footage of it. People playing it. I when it is finished, I will definitely dive back into this game. They're very well made, and they're just. I think when the first one did come to Switch, it was like on the top seller list for a long time too. Like, everyone hopped into it. So
Yeah, I remember it doing well at the time. I think mm-hmm. it did so well, like, that's... I'm pretty sure it was a pretty small indie developer.
Yeah.
And I think they were kind of so surprised by the success that it actually gave them the ability to do that sequel pretty comfortably. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always good.
Yep. Yeah, well, that's... our first go at the Secret Santa. I think a couple of us maybe didn't pick the best games, but
it was my idea and I've suffered the consequences.
Yes. You brought this on yourself, Paige. You have no one else to blame but yourself.
Except David.
Yeah, David
or Perry, because
Nisa.
Yeah, or the Atelier Minima or whatever. Yeah, it's called. Yeah, yeah. I guess I should have stuck with my original instincts and just went with Final Fantasy X-2. Because that was my first pick.
Have you played that, Paige?
No.
I want to play that. Actually.
How would that be to play? Well? Like, isn't it like? Wait, so you're gonna give me the second part to a game instead of the first part? And I was
that was part of the reason why I decided not to. But at the same time, I don't think you necessarily need to play the first game to even, like, it's kind of its own thing. Like, the only really thing you need to know is that she's looking... Oh, man, I don't want to...
Careful.
I guess you're going to spoil the first game to know the second game.
Yeah. If you know exactly how the first game ends, you'll love the second one.
So go look up the ending of the first one and then play the second one. Yeah.
But that's literally all you need to know is the ending. All you need to know is how the game ended. That's it. Like, not even...
Sentence. Game. I want to play X2 this year, so if anyone else is interested, I'd be happy to do an episode.
We can do the game. Perspective on what it is to play it without knowing the
perfect.
I think within like 2 hours of the game, there's a mini game where there's like, oh, I don't even know how to spoil it.
Don't say anything else about the game. It's not possible to talk about without spoiling.
Yeah, that's good. All right. Well, maybe that'll be the other part was I couldn't find it for under the. I kept looking for the price to be under the, because X2 like only comes with X, and you then gotta buy the both, cheapest I could find it was like $39 or something. So it was over our limit.
Gotta wait for it to go on sale.
That's why I didn't give the Princess Maker game specifically, because they just weren't even on sale at all, and then they were like, and like the cheapest one was still like quite a bit over the limit, I ended up having something that was on the lower end, because the thing I thought of first was just not even, it was just way over. It was like three.
Yeah, I think we should do something like this again. I think it was pretty cool. I know we talked about not just doing a Secret Santa one, but even, you know, when the Steam has a summer sale, like doing something like this is pretty cool. Keep the same kind of money limit, because I think it lets us try games that we wouldn't normally play or wouldn't normally suggest to other people. So definitely a good idea, and I'd be in for another one for sure.
Yeah, no, like you said, gets you out of the comfort zone, which is always good, especially, you know, a lot of the time with RPGs too, right? Since they're so long, it's so easy to fall into the comfort zone more so than sort of, you know, taking that risk. And yeah, definitely.
You mean the Final Fantasy 14 zone, Casey?
What's up?
Final Fantasy 14 zone?
Comfort zone?
Yeah, absolutely not. but that maybe I'll give you a Romancing Saga too. You can try that.
Well, you'll only have... You just beat Endwalker, you know? I mean, you only have to just, you know, play through the game up to that point to beat it. But then after that, you know, it's easy.
I'll tell you right now, the only way I'm going to play it is if I lose a bet. So if, you know, next if we have like an E3 bet or, something related to games this year, Metacritic scores or whatever, then that'll be the thing that gets me to download it. So
I think Casey's just happy that Octopath wasn't on sale that week.
Yeah. Woof.
you can't have Octopath on too many consoles. You gotta have it everywhere. So
I think we checked all the boxes for the drinking game.
Yeah, definitely.
Had to get that last jab in. So
it's always in the last 5 minutes, right?
If everyone's not completely plastered yet, then I just put them over the hump.
Yeah. So I think we'll wrap up here. Nice to get the crew together to talk about the holiday games that we picked up for each other. That's pretty fun. We'll definitely have to do it again. But yeah, thank you obviously to Paige, Casey, David, everybody for joining us. Thanks everybody for listening. We've got episodes coming up on Castlevania 4, Dirty Mage, we're going to do that, Dragon's Crown. I know we've talked about some of these games before, Valkyria Chronicles, yeah, those are all kind of on the horizon, get to those when we do. Hope everyone has a really good night, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Adios.
Bye.